But so once you have crossed that, again, focus now on the intending immigrant, the noise and then all the concern has been focused on these public benefit programs. I'm going to say something fairly radical now, in that just about all of your applicants for adjustment of status are not eligible for these public benefits. They haven't gotten them. They can't get them, right? So we're not going to be spending a lot of time on this. The whole issue is whether the service is now going to use this discretionary power to say whether or not they are likely to get them in the future, right? So don't worry too much about whether they've received them or whether their family has received them. The issue really is showing all of these other five factors, which we're going to go through here. Another thing to keep in mind, this is a totality of the circumstances test. So you may have clients who are low income, don't have education skills, may not speak English, et cetera. Don't get discouraged. Don't get hung up. You can have a few negative factors. What you're trying to do is show that the balance of the positive factors outweigh them, right? So we're going to get into the I-944. We're going to get into supporting documents that you're going to need. We're not going to really talk about public charge bond, why they haven't issued any adjudications yet. And it's unlikely, frankly, that the Department of State is ever going to issue a public charge bond. We don't know how the USCIS is going to rule on it. All right, quick update on litigation update, because really we could be talking for the whole hour on what's going on here. As you may know, many courts enjoined the enforcement back in those injunctions, issued a stay. Those injunctions are still in place. They're just not in effect, I guess you could say. And the two that are most important came out of the Second Circuit out of New York and also out of Illinois, Seventh Circuit. Those have now been affirmed by the Seventh Circuit in a decision that, interestingly enough, was a 2-1 decision. The only dissenting appellate justice happened to be Amy Comey Barrett. So we're going to see that rise again when the Supreme Court accepts cert on this. The other was the Ninth Circuit, and the Ninth Circuit unanimously affirmed the injunction. So that's the one that the Supreme Court is going to accept cert on. There was a separate set of lawsuits challenging the injunction based on COVID-19. And for a brief period of time from July up until September, that stayed any enforcement, both on a nationwide basis and then narrowly for the three states involved in the Second Circuit. Anyway, that injunction has been lifted or stayed as well, and we're back in full force now. The government has said that any I-944, any 485s filed without the I-944 that are received on or before October 13th, what, a week ago, we'll get an RFE. And that includes any I-485s filed while the injunction was in place. So anybody submitting anything after February 24th, 2020 can expect to get an RFE requesting the I-944. If the I-45 is filed and received on or after October 13th, then you're going to get a rejection if the I-45 does not include the I-944. All right, let's start getting into these five factors. So, Terry, tell us, start it off with talking about age here.
Okay. So age is the number one on the factors in the regs. I don't know if it was because of the alphabetical order or if they are actually, if they place any importance, but essentially, if you're between 18 and 61, it's a positive factor. And then below 18 and over 61, which I personally take offense, is a negative factor. The being below the age of 18 is a little bit easier to counter in terms of giving positive factors that would countervail the negative impact of being young. So basically, if you're under 18, then the things that you want to point to is that the person's a full-time student. That's considered a positive factor. If they're employed or financially self-sufficient, that obviously would be a positive factor. And then if their company are calling to join a parent who's able to show support for them, then that's, you know, mitigates the inherent negativity of being under 18. It's a different story for over 61. Then we really want to look at whether or not they have income. I mean, if they have a source of income that is shows that they're over 125% of the poverty guideline, then that is obviously going to countervail the assumption that somebody at 61 is a negative factor inherently. Current employment and job history is also a positive factor. If they have the sources of income or assets that show that they're going to be able to support themselves, those are all ways of showing that that's the inherent negative age factor is going to be countervailed. And the other thing, you know, as far as employment, you know, that you want to look broadly at that concept of employment. So they may be employed doing something such as, you know, caring for somebody's young family members. So that's also another factor to consider when looking at presenting age and the impact of age.